This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, November 17th of 2021. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Alexis Kenyon is operating the board. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder has a newly sworn-in city council and a newly appointed mayor. We'll hear thoughts from a now former city council member who chose not to run this last election. El Comité de Longmont is releasing a book about Latino family histories in the city. I'll speak with the organization's executive director ahead of tomorrow's book launch. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You, and herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's Good Ol' CU with Joe Uhas. At 9 a.m., it's, well, That Went Sideways, a podcast about conflict resolution co-hosted by Sam Fuqua. Today's episode looks at the Support Team Assisted Response, or STAR, program in Denver. And at 9:30, Uncle Jeff will be in the Boulder studio to bring you the Morning Sound Alternative and a mix of eclectic music until noon. All that's still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
The pilot of a single-engine plane fighting the Kruger Rock fire near Estes Park died yesterday evening when his plane crashed. Crews found the crash site south of the town at around 9:30 p.m., 3 hours after the accident had been first reported. The Larimer County Sheriff's Office said that the pilot was the only occupant of the tanker plane. Meanwhile, the Sheriff's Office said that the fire was first reported about 7 a.m. yesterday morning. As of last evening, it was estimated at 130 acres and was 15% contained. Multiple evacuations were ordered and no structure damage had been reported. Health officials and agencies around the Denver metro area have urged Governor Jared Polis to issue a statewide mask mandate. The Metro Denver Partnership for Health is also asking that vaccine passports be required for indoor settings. The group sent a letter to Polis late last week because of the surge in COVID-19 cases hitting hospitals. The officials wrote that high-risk places such as bars, restaurants, gyms, sporting events, and other large gatherings should require face coverings where vaccine passports are not required. The Denver Post reports that the group urging the action includes Boulder County Public Health, Denver's agency, as well as Jefferson County and Tri-County Health. On Sunday, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment announced that beginning this Friday, people attending large indoor events in the Denver metro area will be required to have been vaccinated against COVID-19. That order applies only to events attended by 500 people or more. The governor has been reluctant to issue a statewide masking order, even though he has said that the entire state is considered at high risk of infection. Health leaders in the state are also asking the governor and lawmakers to use $150 million from federal funds from the American Rescue Plan Act to rebuild Colorado's mental health system for children and teens. Representatives of Children's Hospital Colorado, joined by other providers, say that there are not enough services to address the growing crisis. They noted that younger people are experiencing higher rates of anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, and other issues. The Denver Post reports that yesterday morning, Children's Hospital had more than 20 kids waiting in emergency departments for an inpatient bed. The police and fire departments in Aurora have agreed to reform various policies in a settlement with prosecutors from the state attorney general's office. The city will improve its use of force policies and training, and a new system for collecting data about police interactions with the community will be developed. The Colorado Sun reports that the Aurora agencies will ensure that chemical sedatives like ketamine are administered lawfully. In September, the AG's office had released a report damning the Aurora Police Department for consistently violating state and federal law in a pattern of racially biased practices. Also in Aurora, the police department said yesterday that two of the victims from Monday's shooting at Nome Park will have long physical recovery from their wounds. Six teenagers were shot near Aurora Central High School. None of them died. A reward fund has been established offering $7,000 for information leading to the identification and arrest of those responsible for the shootings. A new city council for Boulder was sworn in yesterday. The Daily Camera reports that incumbent Mark Wallach was joined by new members Matt Benjamin, Lauren Folkerts, Nicole Spear, and Tara Weiner at a ceremony in the morning. Last night, the council approved a referendum that will require voters to decide whether they want to repeal the CU South annexation agreement. The council had approved the agreement in September. However, now that agreement will move forward and has not yet been decided. How it will move forward has not yet been decided. Aaron Brockett was selected by the council to be the new mayor of Boulder. The Suncor refinery in Commerce City could be required to monitor and limit the runoff of dangerous forever chemicals. According to the Colorado Sun, yesterday the state released a draft of a new water quality permit for the company, which officials say demands rigorous benzene cleanup and other controls in addition to the PFAS limits. However, it's anticipated that advocacy groups and neighborhood residents will ask for tougher limits during the 90-day public comment period on the proposed permit. In related news, the Sierra Club released a report yesterday, along with community groups, questioning the continued operation of gas-fired power plants in Denver. The environmental groups are pushing for the closure of the Arapaho and Cherokee electric generating stations. The Colorado Sun reports that the organization says Denver has pledged to be using 100% renewable electricity by 2030, but some of Xcel's turbines at those facilities are scheduled to burn gas through 2055. The plants in question no longer burn coal, but they rank near the top of polluters in the state. The National Weather Service says it will be sunny today with a high near 40, an overnight low of 21. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-50s, and Friday, the high near 60. Right now, it's about 28 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder has a newly seated city council, freshly sworn in yesterday. The city also has a new peer-appointed mayor, Aaron Brockett. Three of the four new council members are from the progressive slate. Just after the swearing-in ceremony, KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better sat down with outgoing city council member Mary Young. Young, whose birth name is Maria Dolores Gutierrez, was the only Latina serving on Boulder's city council.
You have served 8 years in city council. Do you feel that your absence leaves a gap in representation for the Latino community?
I'm hoping that someone will pick up that mantle, or that baton, should I call it, because there's a lot of processes and projects in place that will continue the work. So I'm hoping that there will be new champions of that particular line of work and that much of this work will continue.
You have been in city council for the last 8 years. What of your goals were you able to accomplish in that time?
Thank you for that question, Rosanna. As you mentioned earlier, one of my goals was to work to make Boulder more inclusive and to folks that aren't usually, whose voices aren't usually heard. And I think that with the help of many people in the community and with our wonderful city staff, that has definitely been the case. So since my tenure, a couple of things, very important things, I think, actually three, I think, very important things came to pass. One is the establishment of a language access program, which makes sure that everything that the city does is accessible to non-English speakers. The other thing that happened was our engagement staff began a project of community connectors, where there are people that are in community and that bring the needs of the community to the forefront. And then the third thing that happened was the racial equity plan, which was something that began, I think it was 3 years ago, through the membership of the city with the Government Alliance on Racial Equity. So there's a lot of municipalities that are engaging in that work.
The makeup of the incoming city council has been described as the first progressive majority in decades. What changes do you think are on the horizon?
Well, I think that things always change. And if there's one thing for sure that always happens is continually is change. You know, progressive is a name, and what you do that matters are your actions. And so we will see. You know, I have an open mind about what this council will do. It is completely up to them to set their work plan, which will happen in January. and, just keep an open mind and see what happens.
Do you have any concrete advice in particular for incoming members?
I don't want to tell anybody how they do their work or anything like that, but I think the important thing is to come in with an open mind, listen, and to understand that what you do is work that you're doing for the whole community and not just a small segment of the community. And the way that you do that is you're out in the community, and which has been especially hard the last 2 years because of COVID, but trying to get a sense of where the many, many people that are in this town, where the sense of where they're at. It's real easy to get caught up with just reading your email or reading Facebook or the Twitter feed and think that that is the opinion of the whole. It is often not. And that's why it's important to have in place things like the community connectors and to be out in the community talking to random people.
Is there anything you wished every day citizens of Boulder understood how the local government operates?
Well, first of all, I think municipal government is the most important form of government because it impacts your daily life most directly. And so I think that people should at least be aware of who their council members are and know what is going on in town, which is real easy. All you have to do is look at your newsletter that arrives in the mail. It arrives quarterly, but I think that should give people a sense. And while national politics are important, I think that municipal politics are the place where you can have the most impact on changes.
Why didn't you run again?
I didn't run because 8 years is a long time, and I think that you have to know when to fold them and to give somebody else a chance, because as you hold a seat, that means that somebody else isn't holding that seat. So you have to make space for new leadership, and that's what I felt. And it's time to give the baton off to someone else. But the work will continue, and I will work to continue to hopefully create new leaders that can someday run for council. I'm going to miss being on council, but I'm happy to see that there's a new council, and I hope that as the new council moves forward, that the number one priority that they have is to work with each other and listen to each other and come to agreements on how they can move forward in whatever they do. I wish them the best of luck.
I have been speaking with outgoing City Councilwoman Mary Young, who has wrapped up an 8-year term in the local office. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
The community-based organization El Comité de Longmont will be releasing a book this Thursday at the Longmont Museum. Joining me to tell us all about it is Comité Executive Director Donna Lovato. Thank you for joining us and welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about this event and the book behind it.
Well, I'll give you just a real quick history. Back in 1988, the Longmont Hispanic Study Group, working with Olivas Duncan, I think her name was Erminda, they published the first book, We Two Came to Stay. And actually, in 1971, the people who settled Longmont, they wrote a book that said they came to stay. And it was a history of Longmont. So then the Latino community wrote the book that said, we too came to stay. And it was the first edition, and they got grants. They worked a lot with the City of Longmont Senior Center. And they interviewed, five families or individuals that lived in the community during that time. And Mrs. Olivas Duncan, she had actually got probably like 10, 20 years later, she started getting five more families to tell their story, or six more families. And so we now, with Mrs. Olivas Duncan has passed away, but she gave all her images, her stories to El Comité, and I had this book, and actually Martha Moreno, who was here before me, she always said we were going to do it, and then she retired and it was still here, and I said, let's do this. And so Marjorie McIntosh, who helped edit the first edition, helped edit the second one. And it's a wonderful book because it shows the first stories, the stories from the first book. And then it has a piece that talks about the history of the Latino people in northern New Mexico, southern Colorado. And then it ends with the six new interviews. And so we're doing a book signing and sale, and it's a benefit for El Comité, this Thursday, November 18th, from 4 to 6 at the Longmont Museum. And so I would just like to invite you and everybody listening to please come to our event.
So this is, it's not a completely separate book, but rather it's an expansion. It builds on the work of the first book.
It's a revised and expanded, absolutely. It's really a history of the Longmont Hispanic community. And what's interesting is these are people who, all the stories are really about people who lived in the 1920s, 1940s. They talk about being here in Longmont and working the fields and just everything that goes with that. And I think the important thing of this book is to remind families to share their history. Every family has a story, and every family has a history, and they should pass it on to their children. And so I think that's another big take from this book.
How would you characterize the way the Latino community experience in Longmont has evolved over the 41 years since the founding of El Comité?
You know, I think it's interesting. And if you read the book, and I don't want to do any spoilers, but people remember back in the at the end of the Vietnam War, which is in the mid 70s, there were still signs in our community that said the no N-word, the no Mexicans and no dogs. And, you know, stories talk about having all that discrimination. And so it's really interesting. And I'm not saying it's gone away. It's alive and well in our community. But I think there's more people that are more open to differences and respecting differences. And I think that's what's really important. And, you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, my children can't even fathom the, you know, civil rights and the signs, you know, whites only. This happened in our lifetime. This is not something that we're reading about in history books. So this becomes the history book. And I think it'll be really interesting for our children to read because it really is about people that lived during my parents' time and how classes were segregated. And, you know, we always think, oh, it was a black and white issue, African-American issue. And no, Latinos had the same issues. We were classified exactly the same. And because we live here in Colorado and grew up in northern New Mexico, southern Colorado, the classrooms were segregated. White kids were in one class and Latino kids were in another class. You know, and whether you call people Chicano, Latino, Hispanic, Spanish, we're all pretty much mestizo from the same area. So it's just really interesting. And I guess the strength of our people to overcome that and, you know, the things that they did with their lives, which is pretty incredible.
I've been speaking with Donna Lovato, Executive Director of El Comité de Longmont. El Comité will be hosting a book launch event this Thursday from 4 to 6 at the Longmont Museum. Felicidades for the book and suerte con el evento.
Gracias. Gracias por todo.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. We now go to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you and tell them in our struggle we...
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Congress is soon expected to pass legislation to implement parts of President Joe Biden's Build Back Better program. Aspects like expanded child care and universal pre-K would make it easier for Americans to make progress on getting back to work. Investments in education, health, housing, and the personal assistance economy can mitigate the damage caused by inequality. A big concern, though, is the price tag, which has already been slashed from $3.5 trillion to $1.75 trillion. Five moderate Democrats said they can't get behind the second part of the president's agenda without a cost estimate from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. Progressives balked, but most agreed to decouple the two big spending bills. The big infrastructure bill has just passed, but Build Back Better comes back up for a vote in the House once the CBO analysis comes through. And now that full analysis may be delayed, though estimates are coming out very soon. Back in the 1990s, the Clinton administration balanced the budget 3 years in a row, while at the same time expanding health care coverage to millions of children. This is evidence that there are ways to widen the social safety net without adding to the national debt. Now, in recent years, multiple tax cuts for the wealthy ballooned the deficit by over $2 trillion, but the long-term investments in the Build Back Better Act can be financed by modest tax changes and by funding the IRS to catch tax cheats, which now cost our Treasury $600 billion a year. One way to bring the price tag down is to lower the time before the provisions sunset out, but Congress often allows temporary spending measures to lapse. If Build Back Better is considered on its own merits to advance a more equitable and dynamic economy whose expenses are paid for, the answer of many economists is that both are possible. Joe Manchin in the Senate is on record opposing the paid family and medical leave provisions currently in the House bill, and he also came out in opposition to tax credits to manufacturers of union-made electric vehicles. Manchin is also raising doubts about the inflationary potential of the act. The House and Senate have less than a week before the Thanksgiving recess, and when they return, they face a must-pass deadline, several, like government funding and a debt ceiling increase on December 3rd. Then they have to wrestle with the annual defense funding bill. After that, Congress will have only 1 week before the year is up for Christmas and New Year's break. The concern now is that Build Back Better Act will lose momentum and the benefits to the American people will not be felt in time for the midterms. If you have thoughts on the Build Back Better bill and its more controversial provisions, you can contact your representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with Brigitte Mars, which is on the road this week.
Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about healing the nerves. According to some of the principles of Asian medicine, when we think of our nervous system, we really want to think a lot about the health of our wood element or the liver and the gallbladder. That system is greatly nourished by things like green leafy vegetables and a little bit of sour like pomegranate and kiwi and citrus. But ultimately, when I think of healing the nerves, I think of the herb, or actually mushroom, lion's mane mushroom, which is a great nerve restorative. It comes in capsules. You can also buy it in the grocery store and use it as a delicious vegetable. You probably have heard of St. John's wort, which is good for mild to moderate depression, but homeopathic St. John's wort with the name Hypericum is really wonderful for nerve injury. I would also think of Hypericum or St. John's wort oil to apply topically when wanting to heal the nerves. Also, anything that improves peripheral circulation, like blueberries, cherries, colorful fresh fruits and vegetables are going to be wonderful. Massage with olive oil would be another consideration. And you can use St. John's wort in tea, tincture, or capsules as another ally. When healing our nerves, it's really important to get some care like acupuncture, massage, doing things that help alignment. I really love the book Somatics by Thomas Hanna, because if there's something out of alignment in our spine or neck, it's going to affect the whole body. I also love tools like the Dino power balls, these gyroscope balls that you can get spinning that really help you to increase your mobility. They light up. They're kind of cool. Use them on both hands and switch directions. I also love tools that get you to exercise your hands. For example, there's a yoga pose called the rose where you make a really tight fist as if your fist were a rosebud, and then open, open, open gradually as if the rose were opening in the sun. It's so important. All it takes is one little area of our body to affect everything else. So hopefully you've gotten a few ideas on things that can help repair the nervous system. Thank you for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Rosanna Longo-Better, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program, and to Dr. Decibel for production support. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Alexis Kenyon has been operating the board. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then, good ol' CU with Joe Juhasz. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.